This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Kia ora and welcome. Before we start, a quick disclaimer. Chronic illness is a complex topic. What works for some people may not work for others. If you would like to pursue anything you've heard on this show, please seek independent medical advice. Kia ora, you are listening to Sick and Tired Aotearoa on Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. I'm Renee, and I'll be your host for the next half an hour. Today, I wanted to talk about some of the issues people face when they are living with a chronic illness and they are in a relationship. A couple of weeks ago, Ricky Andrews started a petition asking the government for individualised disability support. The petition calls for the community services card, disability allowance and supported living payment to be assessed on an individual basis, not including a partner's income. At the moment, a couple with no dependent children could earn no more than $55,501 combined to qualify for a community services card. This card entitles people to discounted medical bills and some discounted community services. A couple with or without children could not earn more than $1,295 a week and receive a disability allowance. A similar level of income cutoff applied to the supported living payment. These are benefit payments designed to help pay for the extra cost involved with being a disabled person. A lot of people don't realise that the household income limits are very low and are discriminatory towards disabled people who are in relationships. Once a disabled person begins a relationship, their partner is considered to be their provider. The supported living payment doesn't go to the person with the disability. It goes to their partner. So if a partner is working full-time, they most likely will not qualify for that benefit. This is quite an antiquated system and puts extra burden on couples who are already struggling. In this day and age, couples need to be both working in order to get a mortgage for a home. If one of them suddenly becomes ill or disabled, they end up being on one income, but they still have mortgage payments and household bills to pay. This happened to me. When I got long COVID, I didn't qualify for ACC or MSD support, but I still had kids to feed. I had to sell my house and downsize. I lost the equity in my home and was unable to pay for things like my daughter's wedding or send my other child to university. I had to pay for my medical needs, including accessible ramps, etc., out of my husband's income. There are treatments which might help me, but I simply can't afford them. And anyone can become disabled at any time. This could happen to you. If you are disabled and you want to start a new relationship, you are essentially asking your new partner to pay for your existence from the start. You lose your financial autonomy. Some people have had their access to home help cut because it assumed that their partner would be their carer as well as working full-time, which just isn't logical or feasible. This can sometimes put people in dangerous situations. It entrenches disabled people in poverty or dooms disabled people to not enter relationships, which adds to isolation and loneliness. So I thank Ricky Andrews for the petition, which received 6,504 signatures in a short amount of time. Green MP Ricardo Mendes-March formally presented the petition to the Petitions Committee in Parliament, and it will likely be announced by the Clerk of the House on the 21st of July. So for more info about this, look up Decouple NZ. Now, stay tuned for a good news story on chronic illness and relationships. You are listening to Sick and Tired Aotearoa on Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. Our next guest is Liz Malone, who has lived experience of ME/CFS and fibromyalgia. Kia ora, Liz.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us on the show today. Where in Aotearoa are you based?
I am based in the sometimes sunny Palmerston North.
Wonderful. Can you tell us How did you realise you had a chronic illness?
I'd faced other health issues in the past, and you get very used to being unwell and then getting better. And then when you're facing something where you don't get better, and you're going to doctors and you're saying, hey, I'm still not better, and you start looking at pretty much everything you can possibly look at to figure out what's wrong with you. It's very hard for a healthy person to think that there are things that you don't get better from by seeing a doctor. And so going through that diagnostic process took a long time. But once I had that diagnosis, it really opened all the right doors, I think, to be believed and to get the right treatments and all those kind of things.
How old were you when you thought, look, something's definitely not right here? And then how old were you when you finally got those diagnoses?
I was 24 when I had multiple clots in both of my lungs. And that is what they think is my catalyst event leading me to develop ME/CFS. That recovery period took about 18 months. And you sort of reach a point where you are told, okay, your lungs are okay now. You're not going to need a transplant. You're doing really well, but the rest of your body isn't. And we don't know why. That process of getting a diagnosis would go on to take like another 3 years or so. I went to the Queen Elizabeth Recharge Program in Rotorua, and then I went and saw a private specialist in Wellington, and then the ME specialist in Auckland, Dr. Ros Vallings, who's now retired. So it was a long process that was not funded. Basically, you feel like you're dying, and you think to yourself, well, what if I am dying and no one knows what's wrong, and I really want someone to tell me what's wrong? So it's very freeing in a way to get the right diagnosis and to be like, oh, I'm not losing my mind or losing my body. It's a real thing that other people are experiencing as well.
How did that impact on your life, being a young 24-year-old wanting to do all the things that young 24-year-olds want to do?
Well, before my illness, I was studying social work full-time, and I was also working full-time and setting up a nonprofit on the side. So I was a very busy, high-achieving person. And so to go from that to, you know, I'm struggling to lift a glass of water is such a huge contrast in ability. You are like, there's no one in my peer group who's experiencing this. There's no support group that's out there. Until, of course, I got the right diagnosis and I was able to find those support groups online. You did really feel alone in what you were experiencing because you didn't see people in the same season as you because they were also at home in bed and not in the places that you were used to being. Very lucky to have some very supportive people in my life. But even for some of them, it was a difficult thing because you are used to really supporting people for a short amount of time when they're unwell. So if they've got a broken leg, for example, we can be there for 6 weeks for people. That's fine. That's doable. But when there's this big question mark hanging over you of, well, why aren't you better yet? That can be very isolating.
Would you have found that after a while, all those people that were there to support you kind of petered off? Did you have other support around you at the time?
I was very lucky. I had some really great friends and my family's wonderful. My mum's actually a retired nurse.
Oh, that's handy.
A built-in nurse in that regard, which I was very grateful for. And she definitely helped me navigate the healthcare system to figure out what was available to me. But I think when you're talking about other young people, a lot of them themselves haven't experienced these kinds of seasons. I would get empathy from people's parents where it's, oh, and I know how you're feeling because I've got arthritis or I've got, you know, whatever. But when you're talking about people in their 20s, that's not normally been on their radar that one day they might just get sick. I think people tried to understand. And I think as I had friends who started having children and they started to see their bodies maybe not bounce back to the same level after having kids, they were like, oh, I can see how your body can change as life changes and not be the same and not just be able to stay up until 3 a.m. and have a sleep and wake up and feel fine again because those things have changed for them. And so when they sort of started having those kinds of experiences later in life, there was a lot more empathy, I think, there.
I hear that you've recently got married. Congratulations. What was it like dating with a chronic illness?
Tricky. I was upfront about it from the beginning. So I did online dating and I had it on my dating profile that I had a chronic illness. I didn't necessarily go into huge detail, but I sort of felt that if just mentioning that on your profile was enough to turn someone off, then like, I don't have the energy to waste on you anyway. You know, I've got this finite amount of energy to invest. I don't want to be fluffed around. And so, you know, I had that on my dating profile and was very upfront about that, you know, the first or second date that I would go on. When I met my now husband, I was upfront with him, of course, and he was very encouraging and very supportive. But I really felt that, oh, wow, I may be limiting this man by having to potentially take care of me, depending on how the week is going, the month is going, whatever, with my health. Poor boy. I tried very hard in the beginning, I think, to get him to break up with me.
Oh, goodness.
In the hope that he would be free to pick someone else who was maybe like a little bit more able to do the things that I thought that he would want to do with his life and that I was holding him back from. And I sat him down and I pulled out all the spoons in my kitchen and I explained spoon theory to him, which is, you know, each person has a finite amount of energy each day and you've got 10 spoons and I only have 5 spoons and they're gone before I'm left the house, you know. And I sort of explained this to him and I said, there are going to be times when I just can't do the things that you want to go and do and you have to do them without me. And if you don't want to really have that life, then I won't be offended if you want to break up. That's, you know, fair enough. And instead of doing that, he emailed me that night a spreadsheet that he had made where he had put in all the dates we'd been on and he wanted me to fill out how much energy each thing took and how much joy I had doing it so we could find the things that made me the happiest with the least amount of energy.
Oh my goodness, that is so sweet.
I know. I was like, wow, this man really wants to spend time with me and to learn about me and to build this relationship, but build it from where I'm starting from and not the fake healthy mask you kind of put on when you're out in public for an hour. So yeah, that worked out really well. We're now married. We got married at the start of this year. And, you know, even in the wedding planning process and the wedding day itself, having things set up for my chronic illness was really important, even in terms of like the accessibility of the venue or how we plan the run of the day. I have the most energy in the morning. So we're planning like a morning wedding, not like a 3 p.m. wedding that goes until midnight. That's just too long of a time. There was a lot of decisions that were made of like, how can we enjoy the day? Then also, how can we go away on honeymoon and not have it be Liz is miserable the entire honeymoon because she used all her energy on the wedding and she wants to just curl up in a ball in a nice batch somewhere because she's miserable. He wanted me to enjoy the wedding as much as he was going to enjoy the wedding, which was also really lovely. And we had a lot of help, which I also am very grateful for.
Wonderful. That was Liz Malone talking about her lived experience with chronic illness and relationships. We'll hear more from her after the break. We're now going to do a little bit of breathing. This time, I want you to get comfy, relax your shoulders, and you'll breathe in through your nose for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, and then breathe out through your mouth for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. So it's a bit of box breathing. Let's begin. Breathe in through your nose. Hold your breath. Breathe out through your mouth. Hold your breath. Breathe in. Hold your breath. Breathe out. Hold. Breathe in. Hold. Breathe out. Hold. Well done. That was box breathing. It's now time for our music session. If you struggle with music, now is a great time to pop your device on mute for the next 4.5 minutes. For the rest of you, we have an exciting new track from Wolfboy. This one is called Interlocked, Interlinked. Thank you. That was Interlocked, Interlinked by Wolfboy. To find more music like this, head to wolfboy@bandcamp.com. Welcome back. We are talking to Liz Malone about her lived experience with chronic illness and relationships. Do you have any tips on what you can do to make life easier while you're dating and while you're planning a wedding and while you're just coping with chronic illness?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things was being honest, because I could put that hat on for that coffee outing of I feel great and then go home and curl up in a ball and be miserable. And that would probably work while I was dating, but that really wouldn't work if we were married, because I'm curling up in a ball on his couch and he's seeing me doing that. And he's like, why did you put yourself through this? You know, so there comes a time when you have to be willing to be vulnerable about the things in your life. I call it where the bodies are buried. And everyone's got that to an extent. And so for me, my biggest one was my health. But for the person you're dating, maybe that is their finances or their family or whatever other thing that they have in their life. This is my non-negotiable, or this is the thing that I'm bringing into the relationship because I don't really have a choice about it. Knowing those things about each other in advance and still choosing to date each other after that is really important. And I think where sometimes things run aground for people is they aren't honest at the start. Then you get all these feelings involved and all these shared memories and shared experiences. And then you find out the big bombshell of, oh, by the way, this big thing is happening in my life or in my past or in my whatever. And you're like, well, why didn't I know to make that choice as to whether you continue that relationship?
And a lot of that is really based on fear, isn't it? That, oh, if I tell this person this, they might say no from the get-go. But you were quite courageous, actually, in stating it from the get-go on your dating profile to be like, look, this is who I am. This is my deal. Take it or leave it, which is just, I think that's great. Mm. And then that ended up setting the tone for your whole relationship.
Yeah. I said to him, I had gotten to a point in myself with my own health parameters of I'm okay with how my life is. And I'm okay with myself. So, you know, I was living with my sister, so I had somewhere to live. I was on supported living payments, so it wasn't amazing money, but I had an income. I wasn't looking for a man to come in and solve these issues in my life. Mm. And so if he wasn't going to make my life better in terms of companionship, compatibility, you know, trust, support, all those things you hope for in a relationship, if he wasn't going to bring that, then I'm literally using up my very precious energy on something making my life worse. Like, why would I choose to do that? That's a very hard thing to realize in a world that I think does kind of push a narrative of a man will fix you or marriage will fix you or this is what you need to be happy. It's not what you need to be happy. It is lovely and I'm very happy, but I was happy before. Mm. And so I think having spent the time on working through the grief of illness and doing the work of that, I could then come into a relationship and be like, this is the grief I'm carrying, but I've also walked it.
Absolutely. And then with all the logistics of having to plan a wedding, a wedding is a big thing. And you were talking before about making sure things were accessible and planned in the way that suited you. Are these all things that you'd kind of adapted through just living your life and dealing with this illness?
Yeah, I think you learn what your triggers are and you learn what are the things that maybe exacerbate your symptoms more. And so I knew how many functional hours I would have in a day. I knew what didn't take more or less energy or would trigger different symptoms. And so the planning of the day really did revolve around like, okay, we're doing a lunch because we can't really wait until dinner. That's too long. We're not doing dancing. That's out. Neither of us are really that kind of person anyway. So, you know, instead we're going to do something different. But there were some things where they were very up in the air. And so I had conversations with my mother about, you know, hey, you may be in a wheelchair on your wedding day. You may not be in a wheelchair on your wedding day. It really depends on what your body is doing on the day. And the venue we've picked can handle both, but you're not going to know. And so there were things like that where we had to have some very real discussions of, okay, if that happened, how would that work? And is the venue accessible or is it actually accessible?
Yeah.
Because those are two very different things. Having a little disabled sticker on the window is not the same thing as being like practically accessible. Yeah. Or even like, you know, can you sit down in your dress if you have to sit in your wheelchair? Is your dress comfortable enough to sit down in? Mm. And, you know, will it fit in the wheelchair? Is it too poofy to do that? So, you know, we had kind of thought out just in case, because even though I thought I had banked a lot of rest in the weeks before the wedding, you just don't know. You wake up in the morning, you have a cold. You have something that knocks you and you don't really get to pick when you get that. So there were those things, but we sort of said the main thing was that we're getting married. And so if it's raining, if I'm in a wheelchair, if he loses his suit or whatever, as long as we get married, that's the main part of the day. That's the goal of the day. Anything else can happen after that. And it's like, whatever, you know.
With that in mind then, did it all go the way you wanted it to?
It was wonderful. It all worked out really, really well. I do think you are running a little bit on adrenaline. So that does, I think, give you a bit of a boost. Adrenaline and good endorphins definitely help. But I did have a lot of people around me who would literally tell me to sit down or be like, drink these electrolytes, you know, to kind of keep me going, because I was sort of in this nice little wedding bubble and being like, I'm just happy and in love. And I'm only thinking about the fact that I could get sunburned or whatever. So having other people around me to kind of remind me of the practicalities of the situation was good, because your brain's really not on your wedding day. You're just kind of thinking about getting married.
Fair enough. And how was the period after the wedding? Did you manage to coast through and not crash too badly?
We'd kind of booked it so that I would get a couple of days rest before we went on honeymoon. Rather than going straight to the honeymoon, we were like, hey, how can we make it so that you're more likely to actually enjoy the honeymoon, but also like be able to handle driving and flying and things of that nature. And even then, we had booked a very quiet honeymoon. The goal was just really to spend time together. The goal wasn't, oh, and while we're there, we're going to do like 15 museums. And how much can we cram into this 1 week of vacation that we've got? It was really, let's just spend time together. And so it was lovely. Mm. And I was very grateful that my husband is incredibly understanding. And I'm also married to like a functional adult, which I highly recommend, because he can and does cook and clean and all those things for himself before he met me. So there was no expectation of like, right, I've got a wife now and she's my mother and my maid. It's today is not my day. I'm not up to it. Cool. He's doing dinner. And that's just fine. That's normal.
Liz, this is an absolutely beautiful love story, and I'm so glad that you were able to share this with us. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I wish you and your husband all the best.
Thank you.
Call to action. The government needs to decouple disability payments. The Community Services Card, Disability Allowance and Supported Living Payment need to be assessed on an individual basis, not including a partner's income. Members of the public, please contact your local MP and tell them how important this is.
Thanks for listening to Sick and Tired Aotearoa. Remind your friends to listen in at npr.nz/show/sickandtiredAotearoa.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.